Trusted Voices is a Cognizant podcast series that aims to showcase the diversity of thoughts, backgrounds, and identity of our 350,000 associates all over the world. Trusted Disruptors is a special mini-series where we ask associates to reflect specifically on what it takes to build trust in the age of AI. Our focus will be on sustainability, transparency, data security, healthcare, global workforce, and more. The dialogue illustrates how we're building trust, especially when we show up diverse. We are really excited to have two of our internal experts on AI with us and on transparency and accountability with us today. Babak and Tahir, I'd love it if each of you would just introduce yourselves and tell us a little bit about what you do at Cognizant.
Tahir Atif, I am the global practice lead for data privacy and responsible AI. I've been in this sector for approximately 13 years, with the last three or four with a much more renewed and focus on responsible and trustworthy AI. Very fortunate to lead probably the world's largest team of data privacy consultants.
Yes, my name is Babak. I'm the CTO AI for Cognizant. I run our AI R&D team out in San Francisco. And I've been also in AI for many, many years, done several startups and worked in larger companies. My team is responsible for the Neuro AI platform currently as part of Cognizant.
So I'm going to guess both of you have nothing to do these days working in an area like AI that, of course, has absolutely no attention being focused on it for the last year or so. And it's a really important conversation that I think is coming to the forefront so much. I think in general, everyone's really trying to, figure out how we balance the potential of AI with the potential for risk that AI also brings. And so I'd love to start off today talking a little bit about bias specifically, which is obviously one of the biggest, sort of red flags in terms of how we are able to interpret the good that we get from AI. What do you think are the most important ways for us to address bias in, not only our current large language models as they exist today, but in AI as it continues to develop and grow?
The complete elimination of bias is almost impossible. But to certainly get a solid grounding, I would recommend organizations follow guidelines like the OECD AI principles or the IEEE ethically aligned design standards. The benefit of these is that they emphasize continual measurement of metrics like statistical parity difference and equal opportunity difference across gender, ethnicity, and other protected attributes. When putting together teams that address bias and AI governance, we need to ensure that organizations have diverse voices and a wide set of stakeholders so that biases can be challenged. You can deploy techniques such as, I'm sure Babak will go into this, techniques such as adversarial debiasing, counterfactual generation, and this all sounds very technical, and synthetic data augmentation, which can mitigate biases. We've also got organizations at the forefront of AI, such as OpenAI, which are publishing their own internal audits and benchmarks to drive accountability. But we must also thoughtfully balance perfection in bias reduction with pragmatism in real world deployment. So to kind of summarize, ensure you have a wide set of data, align with one of many, many standards and guidelines, ensure you have diverse teams at all stages of your AI design, training, and deployment.
I don't know if I have much to add to that, except for maybe a different perspective on where we are with large language models, which is that these models are very, very robust. And so while they're kind of static, so when we train them, we only train them once. So the PT and GPT stands for pre-trained. They don't learn after they've trained. So any inherent biases in the data ends up being reflected. They can take many, many different personas. So the same model could be very biased in one way and then very biased in a different way, depending on how we inquire, like how we query it. And depending on the use case, we might actually want it to be biased one way or the other. You know, a police force, for example, might have different requirements of bias in their use of the models versus, you know, the general public versus, you know, you want it to, I don't know, generate some sort of dramatic narration, for example, and so forth. So I think a lot of it comes down to how we make use of the large language models. And the more restrictions we pile upon these systems, the more we're actually limiting their capabilities as well. So there's a little bit of a give and take in this as well. So it's that's one aspect. The other aspect, I think Tyre also alluded to it, is the fact that these models are inherently black box. Most AI systems these days are neural network based, and therefore they're black box. So it's very difficult to ascertain their inherent biases. And it's also when we're actually asking them to do inference. So when we're actually putting them to use, it's very difficult to know where that inference originates from. What is the logic? What is the reasoning that the model is taking in order to reach some sort of conclusion or generate some sort of output? And that is also something, there's a lot of work on that, but there's no completely satisfying approach currently to mitigate that. And so to summarize, where we end up is this balance of, you know, we have this very, very useful capability in AI, but at the same time, it comes with these inherent risks. And so it's so useful that we kind of have to absorb and mitigate and work around some of these risks that cannot be eliminated.
So interesting. You touched on so many things that are really interesting, including the notion that sometimes the bias is needed because of the output that you're hoping for. And I'm curious, you know, from your perspective, how do we balance these things, right? I mean, on the one hand, obviously, as Cognizant, we want to help our clients create a competitive advantage through the way that they are able to deploy AI. We want it to help their business grow, and we want it to be a positive, make their customers more happy, et cetera. And at the same time, we have to use their proprietary data. We know we're talking about an imperfect technology, as you've alluded to. How do we balance that so that, again, we're honest about the fact with ourselves and with our clients, I assume, that it's not going to be perfect, but that I suppose the benefits outweigh the negatives. How do you think about that?
I think transparency, communication, again, the use of ethical guidelines and responsible frameworks, of which there are now many, ensuring that you communicate throughout the process, you monitor, measure, and mitigate. You also, in terms of accountability and transparency, we know that AI is a force for good. But with that comes risks and also huge opportunities. So publish everything you can with respect to your AI model, the data sets, without having to reveal necessarily the actual IP behind it. There are now some organizations that publish, and we were just talking about bias, that publish their bias baseline so they can continually improve and measure. But, you know, when it comes to AI and ensuring that you maximize the benefits, there's not currently a requirement to publish your proprietary algorithms. So what we need is a partnership between technology companies such as Cognizant and also external auditors. There's groups now like the Algorithmic Accountability Foundation, which provide external auditing mechanisms so the public can trust AI impact without assessing the code. So it's being transparent, communicating regularly, ensuring that stakeholders internally and externally know what you're doing, what you're trying to achieve. And of course, the end goal is for the betterment of humanity whilst achieving the goals of the organization. So it's a balancing act, but one we can achieve in partnership.
Yeah, and be transparent. To Tahir's point, I think it's very, very important for us to be very clear on the context of use. You know, this is where we're using it. Here's how we're using it. Here's how we've set it up for use. I think it's very, very important. It's not something that is being done as often as it should these days, but I think it's very important. One thing, again, a different perspective on this is the fact that, especially when it comes to large language models, if we rely on the world model of these large language models too much, then we're asking for trouble. They are pre-trained, and so they've seen the entirety of the internet as a snapshot, and they pull from that, and that could be a blessing or a curse. If as an organization, we have data and we can create more explainable, more narrow type of AI models and other kinds of algorithmic methodologies and provide that as a tool chest to the large language model to make calls to them, we've done more than one thing. One is we've actually made our large language model much more specific to our domain of use and context. We've controlled how it's going to respond by virtue of all the tools that we're providing it, and we're reducing its reliance on its own world model, which is we don't know where it's going to pull from and what it's going to say and what kind of bias is inherent in the data that it's seen. It's very general, and it might be outdated anyway and irrelevant for the most part. And I think these are some techniques that we can use the reasoning, use the natural language capabilities of these large language models, but have them act as a knowledge worker versus a knowledge retrieval system.
So let's take a look into the future a little bit. So I think I can safely say that AI was the big disruptor last year and will continue to be so. So, putting on your futurist hat, talk to me a little bit about what you think is going to be the future of AI in enterprise-wide settings. Specifically, what are some specific key milestones you think we can expect this year?
All the surveys point to the vast majority, over 80% of organizations, will be utilizing disruptive, productive AI in the next 5 years. With that, it brings challenges. So we need to balance rapid innovation with thoughtful security, accountability, unbiased outcomes, which we've already talked about. We need to make use of frameworks which are continuously being developed, and also use those frameworks to provide guidance while fully utilizing the benefits of responsible AI. We've also got a number of regulations coming in. We've got the proposed EU AI Act. We've also got the US Exec Order on responsible and trustworthy AI by President Biden. So this will require upskilling. I'm fortunate to be a trainer for the IAPP, and they have an AI governance course, and the vast majority of attendees are qualified professionals that want to upskill in the field of AI. We're not all technically minded, but how do we provide that necessary AI governance? So certainly a requirement for all of us who work in governance to acquire and constantly develop our skills in AI. There's already a shortage, and also we've got the proposed regulation in the UK, very early stages, that has the requirement for an AI officer, very similar to the requirements under GDPR for a data protection officer. So you have to have the skill sets required for that. And those skill sets are multidisciplinary. So these are some of the challenges we have as the growth for AI talent is at the moment almost exponential.
I think this year is going to also be an exciting year of moving towards more powerful models. Hopefully we'll get some more, like Gemini just came out from Google. I haven't played around with it yet, but it sounds like a step forward as far as capabilities are concerned. Hopefully GPT-5 is going to come out. These models are going to be more multimodal. I think the video modality is an exciting new modality that we should all be looking forward to, and also comes with its own risks, obviously. We are seeing incremental improvements in reasoning, in math and other areas where the state of the art has really not been quite there. So we want to see some improvements there. The trend with open source is going to be smaller models that are more powerful. So hopefully, one criticism to the larger Gemini model is it's too large, and so inference is too slow and it's too expensive. So we want to see smaller models that have the same kind of capabilities as GPT-3 or GPT-4. We're already seeing GPT-3 level capabilities in open source models, so we'll see more powerful ones coming out. I think this trend of using large language models as agents, which started last year, is a very exciting trend. We've kind of come full circle. The world of AI started off trying to create an all-powerful AI and then kind of gave up on it and said, well, let's create these more limited domain AI systems that work together. And that was multi-agent systems in the late 90s. And now we seem to have come full circle again. We have these very powerful large language models, but we can actually cast them as different agents that work together. And finally, I'm very excited about, the App Store that OpenAI just announced, and I think there will be similar ones coming out as well, where people can create their own assistants, their own GPTs. It's not that they're actually creating a brand new model, they're just prompt engineering them or orchestrating them in certain ways so they can be used in various different areas, kind of like the agent-based system that we talked about. And I think that's interesting because it brings about a monetization path for the general public to contribute and build these systems and put them out there for use. And we saw what happened with, for example, iPhone doing something similar with their app store 20 years ago. So we kind of see the same thing happening here. Would be really, really exciting. So those are just some of the areas I think just 2024 is going to bring. I mean, there's so much more happening in research that would be exciting too.
I mean, this is incredible. I just see it's great to hear the excitement. Of course, this with excitement comes even more disruption, equalizes the playing field. So I think the difference that makes the difference here is going to be the trust that we bring for our clients. So can we talk a little bit about that how are we going to help businesses disrupt in a way that doesn't disrupt trust?
Trust should be, rightfully so, at the center of everything that organizations, ethical organizations do. Trust was a major factor in implementing robust data privacy and data protection regulations around the world. Organizations had to balance the implementation of regulations such as GDPR, CCPA, whilst ensuring. And what was the benefit of that? The benefit of that was that you can, whilst we align to this new regulations, you can trust us with your data. And similarly, AI should be viewed in the through the same lens. It brings risks, but also huge opportunities. It will allow us to personalize services, increase access to information, and of course, the automation of repetitive tasks. But realizing all of this potential requires centering human needs and values. So we must make trust building central to positive disruption by prioritizing privacy, security, data quality, and accountability at each phase of the AI lifecycle, from design, deployment, and monitoring. It's very important that we have dialogue between technology firms such as Cognizant, academics, and policymakers to ensure that we can use disruptive technology, but that one that ushers in shared prosperity. So the key is, from my perspective, a comprehensive approach, technical excellence paired with communication, self-regulation, and collaboration amongst a wide variety of stakeholders.
Very briefly, it's interesting that the world we're in right now, because we've been here before. Like, we trust people. We put people in positions of decision making, and you know, we have a whole framework of what we do. How do we gain that trust? And what do we do when that you know, trust is broken in some ways? And so for the how do we gain trust piece, I think we can readily make use of the frameworks that we have for humans and apply many of them to these machineries that are very general purpose. The flip side is harder to do, because oftentimes we defer our definition because we can assign responsibility. And when we assign responsibility, it's usually to a person. And if that person does not act responsibly, society and organizations have ways to kind of punish them, or, you know, train them, or straighten things out. We can't do that with machines and AI, because we can't give them responsibility. We're not punishing them other than through training, and these systems are pre-trained. So we do have an issue there. Like, if a self-driving car hits someone, you can't take them to court or, you know, give them a ticket. You just can't do that. It's not part of the framework that we have. And so that is part of the challenge that we have. Maybe our grandchildren are not going to have that issue. But for us in this transitional period, I think it's an issue.
I mean, and that's a terrific lead into my next question, which is actually a bonus for our podcast listeners. And this is about your novel, The Narrator, which talks about the, you know, all-powerful AI and the impact that it can have on society. And it begs the question, how much control do we really have? So do you want to talk a little bit about that?
I wrote that several years ago. Actually, it was before we realized that generative systems could be as powerful as they are. I mean, the premise is very simple. It actually weaves together a story based on real facts, images, whatever has happened during the day to you. You know, it can listen to what you're talking about. It can check your photos that you've taken on your phone or whatever else, and weaves a story around that in whatever theme you want. That's the app. That's like the intro to the book. But that app kind of goes astray. So I'll let the listeners read the book on that. But The fact is, first, I was surprised as to how quickly this actually became true.